I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
What is going on with Epiphone? Well, that is a question that we answer this week on the Guitar Nerds Patreon. Just head over to patreon.com/guitar nerds. You won't regret it.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
I'm back.
Jay Cross.
I never left.
And Joe Branton.
I wish I wasn't here.
So do we all.
The three wise monkeys.
So do we all. Evening, gentlemen, how are you all?
Very well, thank you.
Good, thank you.
Great.
Good. I'm going to need you to do some heavy lifting with the podcast this evening because, as you'll be able to tell, probably, dear listener, I am struggling.
Oh,
but
God, you're hamming it up now.
I'm not hamming it up. My voice will keep cracking like that. I think I'm experiencing a second puberty, or maybe the first, depending on how you feel about me. I've got a bad throat. So I'll be here. I'll soldier through, but you guys need to do most of the work. I'll be here to just guide you through and move you along when you are talking absolute guff. So, busy week. Loads of stuff going on. J Cross turned 30.
I did.
Very exciting.
It was my birthday yesterday. And had a great weekend. Both of my mates came out. Both my mates who, you know, I can't think of anybody else who could have been there that wasn't, really.
Yes.
It was, we had, all three of us had a great time.
Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it.
And yeah, just Joe, I mean, you know, we've had our differences, but like, in general, we get along pretty well. I can't really do anything without Mark being involved.
That's true.
I can't think of anybody else who could have been there that would have made it any better.
What were you up to the weekend, Matty?
I was sitting at home crying because I didn't get to hang out with the people I thought were my mates.
Didn't get invited.
They're just a bunch of bellets.
So we should talk about your 30th birthday, Jay. Did a bit of a gig.
Yeah, I put on a little gig because it's an easy way to have a party without making it about you. Which is good. So yeah, just some of my mates' bands played and your band as well.
Yeah, they did.
It was great. Very nice.
It was actually the biannual Mark Packham's Random Heroes.
No, it's annual now.
Oh, it's annual,
once a year
once
we come
year.
Out and
I thought I was going with the other definition of
once every year.
Yeah,
once every
other 2 years.
Yeah.
So,
no, it is once every year pretty much. I think we did two last year maybe.
Leap year.
And your first time seeing us, JB?
No, it's not. No,
really?
I've seen you before, yeah.
No, really?
I've seen you in a couple of different guises.
Oh, right.
I've seen you, Dan Graceless, because, of course, Dan Grace is now playing guitar in your band. With
Danny
his
G.
excellent...
Friend of the podcast.
With his excellent custom shop, Telly. He's got a really nice, like, light relic blonde...
Heavy relic.
Is it heavy relic? Mm, is that heavy
really
relic?
Good. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Sort of blonde. Do you know what year the Telly is?
52.
Yeah.
It's cool. It was great. That guitar sounded brilliant, and he was using his... What's the Marshall he uses?
1974X.
Yeah, really nice.
In white.
Yeah, with a real Klon Centaur.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a real Klon Centaur.
No, it's the, like, what's that one called, Matty? The KTR?
KTR, yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
But effectively, it is the same thing.
Yeah, it wasn't £1,500.
We won't get into that.
No. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so that and he sounded great. I have to say, like, there was a substantial difference in tone quality between your two guitars.
There was. So Tim, who's the other guitar player in the band, he doesn't have a combo, and there weren't any cabs available. So it was just, let's go down there and see like what is available. And one of the other guys who was playing had an Orange CR60.
Yep. Which he bought off the back of listening to this podcast.
Oh, there
well,
you go.
He asked me and I said...
Did you still listen?
No.
Oh, okay. Which
probably
actually,
because he bought that amp.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Taking your advice again.
Considering, I mean, you say there's like a quite a gulf in tone. There's also quite a huge gulf in price between those two things, because those CR60s are what, like...
£300?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And how much is Danny Grace's custom shop Marshall?
£1,200?
£1,500.
Yeah, something like that.
And it is a great sounding amp.
Really, Danny Grace
has one of the best tones for like a simple tone, like just one drive pedal.
Yeah,
great amp, great guitar.
So with the CR60, we kind of knew that either that was going to be there or a Hot Rod Deluxe.
Oh god!
No, it wasn't a Hot Rod Deluxe. It was a Deluxe Reverb.
Oh my god! How would you even go about using that for punk?
Yeah, well, I mean,
so we took Mojo down, and in the end, it was just like we just got the Orange up there first to see we were going to test both of them, and you know, we played for 20 to 25 minutes. It sounded fine. It sounded really good. Didn't even plug the Mojo in. Just went straight in. The drive was...
The guitar as well. He was using like a Mexican strap.
No, which... American Standard.
Oh, it was American Standard with what
hot,
was fitted?
Hot rails.
Hot rails.
No, it's a JB Junior, actually. Yeah. It's the one with the pole pieces.
He bought that from GAC, didn't he?
He did. That was
I remember that guitar. It was a great guitar.
It was a great guitar. That was that guitar in particular was fantastic. Oh, there we go. That guitar got dropped by a customer and had a massive gash down the front of it.
That's right.
And it was kind of... Nobody ever wanted to buy it because it had this really like big scuff down the front of it that went through to the wood. And because it was a great guitar that had cosmetic damage, it kind of became our go-to demo guitar. So if ever anybody wanted to try an amp or anybody wanted to try a pedal and they wanted to hear it with, you know, a good guitar, we would give them that because it was all, you know, bashed up. But then it came to the point where we needed to actually sell it, and because it was so well played, it just sounded so much better than any other guitar in the shop.
Yeah, it feels,
for that price anyway.
I didn't wish to no say the guitar. It was cool, and that was a cool mod for it as well. I just think, obviously, up against the custom shop telly.
A big gash down the front of
it. No, the pickup, but, you know, but up against the custom shop telly. So that was actually different from the last time I saw him. I think he was playing a Les Paul Junior, but that might have been your Les Paul Junior.
No, he did not have a Les Paul Junior. He had an SG that had two P90s in it.
Oh, really?
Which was what he was probably playing. But anyway, that aside... that's basically why I can't talk now.
Because you sang for 22 and a half minutes.
We also had a band practice that day.
Oh, so you sang for 23 and a half minutes.
Yeah. No, we did the set a couple of times, so maybe an hour all in.
What?
An hour. but when you only do that once a year, you know.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it was good.
Painful.
It was very fun.
It
was a good night.
Yeah.
And now I'm 30 and I, being very sensible, I've stopped drinking. I've started eating meat.
Sweet.
Start wearing Adidas.
You have can you guess which of these things is true? One of those three things. Either Jay is now wearing Adidas, he's quit drinking, or he's eating meat. Answers on a postcard to the Guitar Nerds Facebook forum.
But yeah, I feel very much within the club now. So it's great to be there. Hopefully, I can follow in the learned footsteps of my elder statesman and. I don't know. How old were you when you grew a tash? Were you 30 then?
I don't know. 12? 20, yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
When I realised I had a really long head.
You have got a very long head. It's just that the chin is long, I think.
Yeah, that's it.
The tash does take away from that. Did this is a little off topic. Did someone see in the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, someone posted a picture of someone who looks very much like Joe Brandon with a tash that he'd shaved into the Batman symbol?
I did see
that. I thought it was Joe Branson.
So did I.
I was like, that looks so much like Joe.
Yes.
For an individual that has such a stark look about you, you do have quite a number of lookalikes.
Yeah, there are so many people that look like
Phil you. Lynott is the one for me.
Yeah, Phil Lynott, Dick Dastardly.
I hadn't thought about that. That's very good.
The one, if I shave my moustache, I look exactly like Donovan,
the 60s pop star.
Yeah,
right.
Maybe just keep the tash, I reckon. I reckon.
Yeah,
So one of the reasons you can get down to the party, Matt, is you were probably demoed out because you and Joe did a whole new round of Guitar Nerd shows for YouTube on Saturday.
We did. I think we finally kind of like found our niche. I think we kind of really nailed how we were doing the kind of show. And yeah, it's kind of like the podcast on video. And I was really, really pleased with the kind of results we had. We shot 5 videos.
Yeah.
What did we do? We did Shergold guitars.
Yep. That was the only real kind of straight demo. The rest of them I thought were really interesting subjects because we chose things like we did sort of our top four.
I've got a list.
Yeah. Top 4 boutique drive pedals was one of them. We chose our 4 favorites. What were some of the others?
There
was some
we did 3 awesome, weird, and wonderful digital delay pedals you can buy right now. What was the other one? 4 simple.
We did 4 Make Goodera pedals.
Ah, that was it.
Our favorite
that
4
was
Make Gooderas.
Have you put Make really... Goodera into the title?
Yeah, yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Make Goodera.
We might have to tweak that for SEO, but.
No, it's fine.
We'll see.
Make Goodera. I'm into it.
No, we're going to get that in the dictionary. Goodera.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Goodera. It's going to be a new word. And we did 3 weird and wonderful guitar pedals you can put on your pedal board.
Pedals, yeah, that are surprisingly usable sort of thing.
Okay.
But I think, for me, the highlight of the whole thing was the Goodera video, just because it was so... Because it was the most varied. Like, of course, all the drives were cool and unique and all had their own edge, but the Make Gooderas were... There was something like... There was something from every sort of element of making a sound Goodera.
Making you more Goodera.
Like, because they're all subtle, aren't they? That's kind of the idea of a pedal. But that subtlety can come from like a transparent drive. It can come from a preamp, from a compressor, from a booster, you know, things like that. And there was, in the ones we'd chosen, there was something from everything. So we had like the Anasounds Lazy Comp, which is a bamboo topped one control compressor, and the single control isn't the amount of compression, it's the mix between your dry signal and your compressed signal. They've predetermined how much compression there is, so that was super cool. And then there was a preamp.
Is that adjustable with trim pots?
Yes,
inside.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, okay.
So you can change it, but they've set it to what they believe is the optimum, and it sounds great. It's just one of those things you can put on quite low, and there's just something you notice it when you turn it off. And I guess that's the thing about
a good point, isn't it? Yeah,
but I mean, that was like, the kind of thing that we were pushing forward. Was just like it was nice to kind of do that and kind of put our sort of thing that we've talked about for years into like a video, being like, actually, these are the pedals that you kind of turn on and you go, oh, it doesn't really do a lot. And then you forget to turn it off. And then when you actually like go, oh, yeah, you better turn that off while I'm playing with the driver. And you're like, oh, my sound's just like totally disappeared.
Yeah.
But so it was kind of cool to do that.
The a couple of the other highlights from that video, whilst we won't go through the whole thing, I guess. There was the Hudson Electronics, the Broadcast.
Yeah, the Germanium Class A preamp.
What an incredible pedal.
Yeah, it was a shame we couldn't demo it for bass because it does actually work on bass as well.
So you can run it at 9, 18 or 24 volts. And obviously the higher headroom is more suitable for bass. But a really nice, dead simple, like level gain preamp with also a low end, a low cut,
right? Okay.
On there as well, and a little toggle between, a really substantial toggle to switch between like a high gain mode and a standard.
So you can kind of use it like a treble boost.
Yeah, you could do. Yes, yeah, you could. But it was just like a gorgeous warm set. I've been using it at home on my bass, and it's just like I'm thinking about getting one and retiring my Sans amp from my board and having instead. It's just a really nice like vintage warm sounding preamp. So absolutely brilliant.
But, wow, yeah. Interesting. So we think that's going to be the favourite of the videos then, the Make Gooderas. Oh,
yeah, that of the videos, which was the best Make Goodera, I couldn't say, because they were all really good.
They're all really Goodera.
What was the one that American brand that where the pedals are really substantially built?
Oh, they're Petty like John Electronics.
Petty John Electronics, what a brand. Listeners, if you haven't ever checked them out, go and check out Petty John, because they're all like... They're genuinely the best built looking pedals I've ever seen. Like, really, they kind of look like farming equipment.
Or like a sort of like Cold War era submarine controls.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But yeah, super, super cool. I really liked everything that we looked at from Petty John's, but the the Make Good Europe was brilliant.
Nice, nice. Jay Cross, apart from your birthday, did you get up to any guitar stuff this week?
Well, as I said last week, I went to check out another guitar shop.
Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah, yeah.
It's really great, really interesting. It's cool seeing behind the scenes of... It's my first like real visit since, you know, working for a manufacturer as opposed to a retailer, because I knew the inside out, you know, I knew GAC inside out. Going to see how another company goes about it, I thought, you know, because Matt obviously had the hindsight of going from GAC to Anderton, so you know, you know the differences and stuff, and I got to go and see it for myself. It's just really, it's one of the things that I was really looking forward to when moving over to Fender, was seeing how everybody else does things. I find that very interesting. And yeah, it was cool, so that was great. I didn't get any guitar stuff for my birthday, if that's what you're asking. Yeah, I got gin.
Just loads of gin.
Got quite a lot of gin.
Just so. Banging a lot of gin.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's where we're at the moment, I think.
Should we dive headfirst into a whole big bucket of...
Nudist beach.
Nice, nice. Is that you were looking at Justin Theroux pictures again?
I was, yeah.
Yeah. So, first up this week, PRS have announced the S2 Vernon Reid Signature Vela. Matt Knight, give us the details.
Indeed. It was one of those things that I think you posted in the group maybe a few days ago when it was first announced, and I kind of glanced over and went, that's cool. And then when I was actually reading into it, I was like, yes, it is very cool. And then I sort of looked at the price and went, oh. But then I was like, it still looks cool. So yeah, Vernon Reid Signature PRS Vela. Basically taking the Vela body shape, added a Floyd Rose trem and PRS HFS pickups. Because they're a little brighter, they've got a little bit more top end, and he kind of needs that with the amount of stuff that he runs through. I think you kind of need to make sure you start off with a lot of top end, because you're probably going to lose some through the ridiculous amount of cable run that he has. All built in America, hence the price, $2,259.
Oh, I thought it was going to be way worse than that when you said
when I saw Vela, I thought it was going to be the price of a normal Vela, which is like $1,199.
Yeah.
And then was like, oh. But then I also realized they are only making a small... Well, they've basically said there's no limit to the number they're going to make, but the pre-order window is open from the August 8th till September 30th. So it depends on how many get ordered from dealers, basically. Right. So I think it's kind of a cool way to do it.
I mean, you haven't mentioned the most important and iconic thing about it, I guess. The scratch plate is ridiculous.
Yes, possibly one of the craziest scratch plates ever. I think there's two colours, gold and black. And the scratch plate, I think they're different on both. The kind of the black one has a spaceman with a space rocket flying through space with some planets. A rocket with a skull. It also has a bird that like some kind of like there's a skull and crossbones on it. I mean, there isn't anything more you could want from a scratch plate.
I remember a guitar quite similar to this that I think was released by Luna.
Yes.
And it had a clear like scratch plate, but crucially, a bit like one of those Perspex frames you can get for putting paper in, you could slide in your own art designs into this.
Remember that
two ply
perspective.
It came with about 10 bits of paper that had the template on it, so you draw something on it or print something on it and then cut around it and then take the scratch plate off, put that in, and then put the scratch plate back on.
Exactly. Wicked.
That's kind of is what the Vernon Reid looks like, actually.
Yeah, but it's a very, very cool guitar. He's moved from he's been using PRS for a while, but he was using something else as well, but then I remember him mentioning it briefly at NAMM, because, you know, I met him at NAMM, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And, I think I saw a rig rundown with him and he was talking about it, and I think it's been in work for a while. But the Vela itself is just an awesome guitar.
Oh, yeah, it's best PRS.
Is this the first American-built PRS? Papyrus. The first American built Vela.
No, they're all, well, actually, they're all American built.
They're all American built, but they're all like, they're normally like a satin finish.
Okay.
And
I thought they were Korean.
No, because they're part of the S2 range. S2 is American, but it's like above the SEs, basically.
Okay, yeah, cool.
But I'm not sure why this one is a whole lot more.
Well, I mean, I guess it's limited edition, Floyd Rose.
Yeah, I suppose that's
it's signature, which always ramps up the price a bit.
The only thing is, I can't tell. I think it's the same finish. I think it's also satin. It doesn't really seem to state anywhere.
I don't think the gold one is it?
No, it doesn't really. They're not really talking about it, to be honest. I was trying to see if I could find anything about it, but no, just a limited order window. HFS pickups rather than the kind of custom Vela ones. Floyd Rose, very cool guitar. I'm not a fan of the scratch plate. If you could put a different scratch plate on it, I'd be really into it. But yeah, cool guitar.
Yeah, looks awesome. Jay Cross, do you want to tell us about a brand new pedal from everyone's favourite unstoppable pedal producing machine, Electro Harmonix, the Cockfight Plus?
Yeah, so the Cockfight obviously came out.
This is the dumbest thing.
Yeah,
the
so
Cockfight.
Ridiculous.
The what are you talking about? The Cockfight came out a couple of years ago, and you know, we thought, fantastic, you've released a cocked wah, a pedal that you can just, you know, you just get that one sound. And I think what was interesting about it is, you know, they've obviously sat there and they've gone, this is great. However, wouldn't it be great if you could somehow control this effect with your foot, maybe putting it into some sort of expression style housing? So they've made a cocked wah that you can use as a wah. How about it?
I don't really understand how it works.
So there's it's not quite as, I'm being quite facetious. There's some extra features there that do seem quite cool, actually. So okay, there's actually two voicings of the wah. There's your standard crying wah.
Yeah.
And also the there's a talking wah. So you get like vowel sound. You can get some vowel sounds out
more
of
like
it.
A humanizer kind
exactly,
of
exactly. Yeah. Exactly that. There's also a fuzz in there. I haven't been able to find out what type of fuzz it is, whether it's based on anything in particular. But you can, and also you've got the ability to, with the fuzz itself, there's some neat features. So you've got a bias control that lets you drain all the power out of it.
Yep.
To give you that sort of dying battery type fuzz. And you've also got the ability to switch the polarity. So, well, switch, not the polarity, just switch the order. So go fuzz into wah or wah into fuzz.
Nice.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, actually, I think it's, I think they're, if anything, they're trolling us.
Yeah.
They're going, right, everyone's going to be annoyed that we've released a cocked wah in a wah housing. Joke's on you, it's actually extremely usable.
It's really good.
So when I first saw it, I thought this was utter nonsense. But having looked into it, I think this is going to be quite an interesting pedal, and I look forward to seeing it. I think those talking pedals can always be a little bit, you've got to spend time with them. It's not quite as simple as just saying, oh, I want to make my pedal say poo. You know, it's you can't do that.
I do want my pedal to say poo.
But like, I think it will be quite cool if we can. I'd like to get my hands on one, and I mean, I'm not going to use it, but maybe see if Matt can do something cool.
Yeah,
with it.
Matt.
I think it
would be,
I'd be actually like, having read the spec on it, I'm like, that is cool. Because I mean, yeah, people have been making those sort of pedals. I mean, they were sort of big in the sort of 60s and 70s when you had those like monster sized pedals that always did something bonkers, when everyone's going, oh, we've got a wah circuit and a fuzz circuit and they're the only two pedals that exist. better put them in one box. It just amazes me how much they just pump out of that factory. And I know we say it every time there's a product release, but man, they really churn it out.
Yeah.
Like, they must constantly, as soon as someone's done, they'd be like, right, cool, that one's done. Just keep going.
Well, we mentioned it briefly after we saw a video of it at NAMM, but the hot wax has actually been officially announced now.
Wait, I don't even know what that is.
Oh, maybe it was when you weren't here.
Yeah, it might be when I wasn't here.
So maybe it was on the podcast that you weren't around for. We found a video of the Electro Harmonix hot wax.
Okay.
Which was demoed on a I think it was on a Premier Guitar video at NAMM.
Yeah.
and they barely spoke about it, but they've actually released some information on it now, and it's called the Hot Wax because it's another one of their 2-in-1 pedals.
Okay,
it's the hot tubes.
We did talk about this.
And the crayon.
Yeah, yeah. We did
put
talk
together
about this.
In one
excellent
pedal.
Name.
Really, really good name.
Yeah.
Really, I'm sure they thought of the name first and then worked backwards.
Yeah.
But yeah, so quite right, like you say, Matty, they're just constantly releasing stuff.
Even in the last few months, I'm just looking at you've got the screen open there, and they've got a little carousel of new pedals. We've had Tone Corset, the Battalion,
the Hot Wax,
this new Coctoir Plus, the Double Expression.
The three compressors that have come out in the last 6 months.
Yeah, the platform.
Yeah.
The Synth 9 actually is a bit older, but they're still pushing that one. But yeah, I mean, that must be in the last, 2 months?
They've had all those pedals. Like
the crazy thing is, you just would have thought that, like, doing so many products so quickly after one another, you'd lose the hype of, like, the one that you pushed out like 3 weeks ago.
Now people just love it.
Because no one's talking about like the Canyon anymore. Everyone's like, oh, it's going to be amazing. And then it sort of hit the shops. But by that point, they'd already released two other pedals. And everyone's like, oh, I sort of forgot.
The thing is, they're cheap enough that they come out, everyone who wants one gets one. And then there's another thing out. And if people didn't want that previous one, they probably want this one. And they're always like 50 quid or 80 quid or whatever.
But this is relatively new. Like, Electro-Harmonix were, when I started working in the guitar shop, they were, you know, alongside Boss and maybe MXR, those were the three pedal brands.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And, you know, all those pedals still exist. I can't think of anything that they've discontinued.
I think they've discontinued all of the, like, the original hot tubes.
Oh, the big box stuff. Yeah, the big box stuff.
But from when they switched to the Neo series, I don't think anything's been discontinued.
So, you know, something's got to give at some point.
I mean, maybe not.
Well, completely.
What do you think?
Maybe they're trying to build a house out of electro-harmonics.
Maybe they
pedals.
Are. Matt, can you think of anything that's been discontinued in the kind of modern age of electro-harmonics? What about like the Metal Muffs?
They still make them.
But all of the different versions.
I think so. Like the Metal Muff,
Nano, Neo.
Was there a Micro?
Mm. Yeah, I don't think it was Neo. I think it was Micro.
I think it was
Metal
Micro.
Muff.
Right.
No, they did a Metal Muff, and then they did a Nano Metal Muff, and then like an even smaller one.
Yeah, I think
that
was the Micro.
They just took a feature away each time. Yeah.
I saw one of those.
But then I think
Michael
the cheapest one was like 39 quid.
Jay just admitted that he's just sold one of those to Michael Schenker.
I sold one to Michael Schenker, and he said, "What?" I said, "Like, oh, what? Which one do you want?" And he was like, "The small one. They all do the same thing." I'm like, "I mean, fair point. Yeah. It's great."
Fair point. So yeah, good. Some new stuff from Electro-Harmonix. Hopefully, we've not had our hands on much Electro-Harmonix stuff, so it'd be good to get some stuff in for a demo. I think that'd be pretty nice. Joey B, the oldest yet most immature of the group, you're perfectly placed to tell us about
the oldest.
A hot new product from some clothing brand that I've not heard of.
I never think about the fact that I am the oldest.
That's terrifying, isn't it?
So this is what's ahead of you all. This is what lies ahead.
Indeed. That's what I'm trying to avoid. So tell us about the Fender collaboration with Supreme.
That's right. So
are they clothes and
New
stuff?
New York, well, they're a lifestyle brand, Supreme. God. So kind of a hip-hop orientated lifestyle brand. They do some really cool stuff. And what I really like about Supreme as a company, if you don't know about Supreme, is they've come up with this great idea of doing everything in batches. So every time they release a new range of fashion, they also release a range of super limited edition lifestyle accessories. And what's kind of cool is they could be anything. Like Tyler the Creator once rapped about, like, once included in his rap a reference to the red Supreme Nunchucks, which were once released. And it could be anything. Like, in this being the winter fall catalog, Supreme have included a deck chair, a fold up shovel. There are some there is a stack of $100 bills with Supreme written on them. Like, they'll do anything for about quadruple the price of what any of these things are worth. But they do this kind of hand in hand with their sort of clothing as well. So they release a hoodie in sort of a bright pink, but they'll only make 30. And
that sounds great. I love one of them.
This stuff sells out in a minute. Like, every time people are waiting on their computers to order
the new Supreme gear every time they release a new catalog, and they've worked out an excellent business model. Anyway, in this catalog, they have partnered up with Fender to release a Fender Supreme Stratocaster. Now, one of the defining features of Supreme is they're all about like matte plain colors, so they always just have the same logo, and like there'll never be any design on any of their stuff. It's always just plain bold colors that basically look like Gap but with Supreme.
They also do that isn't completely true though, because they'll do photo shoots with people wearing the gear and then sell those as t-shirts, aren't they? Like they did that famous
did
one
they?
With
no, I didn't know.
They've done one with Morrissey, and they've done them with I think Miley did one.
Oh, I see. Oh, right, yeah.
And like that becomes they'll photograph someone wearing a Supreme t-shirt and then put that on a t-shirt.
Oh,
and
that's okay. A theme. Well, that's cool. Anyway,
so then put that on a t-shirt and then that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, that's right.
Genius,
yeah.
Genius. Just keep going.
So so in kind of in line with their really like stark modern simple colors, they have put out a white Supreme Fender Stratocaster. But it's not just, when I say white, I don't just mean an Olympic white strap with a white scratch plate. In fact, I'm not even sure this is Olympic white. It looks far too
it's stark very
for
white.
That. It's very, very white. But it's not just the guitar body. It's not just the head cap either. It's the fretboard and neck, and it's the jack input and the controls. I mean, the bridge and tuners have been missed out, sadly, but they're still silver.
That is weird, because they could have done that. They could have painted
Well,
those.
I don't know why they've bothered with the input jack. That's white, but then they didn't do the bridge.
Yeah, yeah,
that seems
weird.
A bit weird. But, yeah, so it's completely white.
I mean,
so
I don't know why they bothered with the input jack, because whoever buys this is not going to plug it in.
It's
going to
wear it as a fashion.
Well, here's the thing. And it is designed as that. It is kind of an accessory sort of thing. So, and especially with the fretboard itself being white, I mean, I assume that's going to be lacquered. I don't know how playable is going to be or how good it's going to sound.
Someone not post in the Guitar Nerds group a picture of an artist playing this and went, is this some sort of new signature model?
No, it
and
was.
Like, it just looks custom.
Someone was in somewhere like the Fender HQ in the States or something, and there was one of these, and there was a bass as well, and like some other stuff that was just all painted white. It didn't. What Joe? I don't think you mentioned Joe. Is that it's got the Supreme logo directly on the scratch plate?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't.
Which is definitely the worst feature of the guitar.
It seems quite arbitrarily placed, doesn't it? It basically because actually it's the Supreme logo, which is white writing on a red background, and that's exactly how the stickers come. The Supreme stickers.
Yeah.
So this does just look like a white Strat with a Supreme sticker on it. But
To me, it would have made more sense to have it at the bottom of the bridge.
Yeah, anywhere else, or you know, I thought it would have been cool to make the pickups. Like maybe do it HH and have them as Supreme logo pickups. That would be cool.
Yeah.
Anything like that with a bit of attention to detail. I mean, this will probably be, by the looks of the headstock, because it's a 70s style headstock with the 70s style decal in black. This is probably going to be, so it's like an American special, probably, we think.
It looks like an American special.
Has it got a big headstock?
Yeah.
Right.
So it's... But it's probably going to be 4-5 times the price.
And it's 6-point bridge as well, which I guess is American special.
Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
So, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, no one will be able to buy this. It comes with a nice Supreme hard case and a Supreme strap and Supreme plectrums as well, which is pretty cool. No guitar collector is going to buy this. This is going to be bought by some
It's going to be bought by
wealthy
a Supreme,
kid.
Surely a Supreme collector.
Yeah, exactly. But, I think it's still cool. I think it's still interesting to see Fender branching outside of the guitar world into sort of lifestyle stuff.
I mean, it's not that unusual. You know, there was, 4 or 5 years ago, there was the London Underground Strat series.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think they've sold all those yet. You can still get them.
I know we've definitely got one in the office.
I think you can still buy them from the London Underground store.
You could only get them from the museum, I think.
Yeah, I think
you?
They've still got them, yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
That's cool.
So you know, these things come up, and I mean, I don't know how this side of things works, but I'm sure that if you wanted to make it a marketing thing, you could go and speak to someone who deals with the licensing, and they just do it.
Can we get Guitar Nerd Strat?
I mean, you'd probably need to buy a few hundred.
That's fine. People on the forum are buying, aren't they?
Should we give them away as here we go, listeners. If you sign up to the $5 tier. We'll send you a Strat.
We will absolutely not do that. just to be clear, legally, we will definitely not do that.
We might give it a go, though.
No.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, you're right about the marketing side of things. I mean, Gibson did just make an SG out of diamonds.
That's true.
It's, you know, and well, this...
World's most valuable guitar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. No, I think this, like you say, it will be picked up by someone who... is a fan of Supreme more than they're a fan of Strats.
We're never going to hear from these ever again because, like you say, they'll go to people who collect Supreme stuff and
yeah,
that'll be the end of it.
Indeed. One thing that we will hear of probably many, many times in the course of this podcast are Sir's new Finish Over Finish classic antique guitars.
Oh, everyone's jumping on the bandwagon.
Indeed. Matt Knight, tell us about it.
Sir, I love this brand, and I know some people, they're like, not so sure, but actually, having played... a load of them, they all do come out of the factory absolutely amazing. Sound wise fantastic, and they've kind of gone into the, they've always done what they call like the relic or the antique series, and you can get like heavy antique, but these are the first color over color, but it's all solid colors over sunburst. The only thing is, I really don't think the product photography does the guitars justice on their website, because they kind of all look a bit photoshopped on the website. Yeah. I don't know if people can see if they're kind of like at a computer while they're listening to this, but they do look cool, but they almost remind me of how Fender do the road worns.
Yeah, yeah.
That you can tell that they're done with a template.
Well, it's...
No sort of... Because the normal antiques look really, really unique, and they all look a little bit more kind of... naturally relic'd.
Yeah.
Where these look a bit too extreme, but they're focused on one bit, and that, I think that's a bit of a problem.
You are being very nice, Matt. These look awful. These look awful.
They don't look awful. I think what Matt is trying to say, and I agree, is that it's too uniform.
Yeah.
Like the fact that it's all cut and exact. I think the problem is worse when you see more than one, because that's where you can tell, like, right, they've gone, okay, all these guitars are going to be reliced in exactly the same way, basically.
Can't say reliced.
I mean, I didn't, because
antique guitars.
I looked at it and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I saw the pictures and I was like, I'm not sure. And then I was like, oh, they're only making 200.
Right.
But there's so like six colors.
It's not like a standard run.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they'll probably only do...
What, 200 of each or 200 in total?
No, 200 total.
What?
So
I think that's what it's... let me just find where it said. Limited to only 200 instruments worldwide. They come in HSS, SSS, and then five finishes. Black, Candy Apple Red, Fiesta Orange, Olympic White, and Surf Green.
So there's 12 different products, basically, split over 200.
Wow.
Unit. So yeah, you probably won't ever see one of these in the wild, because again, sewer collectors will just buy them straight away.
Which that's the thing, because sometimes you never really got it with Fender Custom Shop, because obviously everything's done like one by one, as it were. But when you had like three or four road worns next to each other, you're like, ah. Oh, but when you can kind of see the uniform in it, but when you take one individually, you're like, oh, that looks much cooler.
Yeah,
but actually, I'm really into the Fiesta Orange. I think the Fiesta orange over Sunburst looks really cool.
I don't think...
And the Candy Apple Red, because it looks like an ash body in the photo, so you can see more of the wood grain. But when you do Sunburst over Older, and there's no wood grain, it just looks a bit cheap, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of Sunburst, of color over color when you're covering over a Sunburst.
I went into
I was in GAC earlier this week, and I saw those the Gibson ones that
the
Les Pauls, and the black over Cherry Sunburst. And it's been the same. This isn't a territorial thing. Always thought the same with the Fenders as well. Because when Matt was specking up guitars, I'd always be like, don't do color over Sunburst. It doesn't look good.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that it's more correct because historically correct, but I didn't think it. I don't know. Yeah. I think color over color, you need to be careful. Like, just going. Mm. Taking a colour and then getting a completely different... You need to make sure that those colours work together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it can be difficult when one of them is Sunburst.
One of the chaps you probably work with occasionally now, Jay, at Fender, has got a 60 Strat, which is Candy Apple Red over three colour Sunburst, which really works because you've got three colours of Sunburst, then the whole thing is covered in gold.
Yeah.
Then it's like a translucent... like candy finish, so you get all these amazing pockets of like what almost looks like colours. Oil spill over
That's
the thing. Over Sunburst only really works, like I say, if it's like an ash body, because then that goes into the wood grain and then you kind of get the nice look of the wood grain and then the colors. But Older, it just looks like when you see those sort of 60 Strats in Sunburst and they're just a bit flat. But the one thing about these, looking at the price, I don't think they're priced much more over the cost of a normal antique, which is good. I mean, they'll be about £2,700, I think. And the actual spec of them is really good. So if you definitely want something different and you're looking at a Sir, that would be, I'd try and find the Fiesta Orange one, because that is definitely the best looking one.
The week before last, John Cruz from the Fender Custom Shop came down. He was passing through GAK on Gay Pride, in fact, in town. I can't remember if we spoke about this on the podcast.
We did.
He popped into GAK because he's a big fan of
Gary Moore,
and of course Gary Moore used to shop at GAK quite a lot. So he came down to sort of see some stuff and check it out and have a chat with us. And of course I was, I did a little interview with him and was talking to him about Fender Custom Shop, and it was actually the day before that was the first time the Gibson color over colors had come in, and he was sort of having a butcher at those, and he was talking about relicking and how he goes about relicking and everything, and he really, really views it as an art form.
And
it was incredible to hear him talk about it and go so in depth about it and really sort of understand what he's like, yeah, I know that some people don't like it and these guitars aren't for them. He was so open about it, but understanding how high the high regard that he has towards relicking, the concept of relicking, and how he goes about doing it really made me realize why I think the Gibson ones and these Sirs would have to look a lot better than they do in these pictures to be the right price.
As Matty says, the pictures do not do. I mean, they've got to look better than that in real life.
Exactly.
They do just look like they've taken a black guitar and then someone has photoshopped a bit of Sunburst in the corner.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think sort of speaking to John Cruz, it made me realize like how hard it is to relic well. And I think that Fender getting it right is so much to do with John Cruz and how good he is, and the sort of how much he's taught everyone at Fender to relic in a similar way.
But we've always said that because working in a guitar shop, we would quite regularly you'd get someone come in and say, they bring in a guitar and you'd look at it and we'd say, have you relic this yourself? And they were like, well, yeah, how did you know? And it's like, you always know when someone like us has done it, because it, like you say, it is an art form and it takes a long time to get it right, and just people like us don't get the opportunity to hone the craft to the point that you need to. So someone brings in a Strat and they're like, oh yeah, it's my relic Strat, I relicked it myself. I'm like, yeah, I know that, I can see. Oh yes.
The story I always remember is when we had the guys from the custom shop in, they were talking about how the guitars are built and the sort of research they have to do. And they said they took apart all these guitars and all these original guitars, and they got down to the truss rod, and they found that basically whatever year you got, you kind of got a completely different truss rod, because Leo was just trying to find the cheapest truss rod he could use.
Yeah, yeah.
And they couldn't find, for at least a couple of the years, they couldn't find the right truss rod now, because you just couldn't buy it. So what they had to do was build the machine to make the truss rods. And it's just that level of detail that you would never even know. Like, how would you, unless you took it apart and you had an original 60s one, and you took the board off and you had the two truss rods.
Like, used the, and you used a micrometer
or whatever. To find out. You would never find that out, but they wanted to create a guitar that was as historically accurate as possible, so they built the machine to build these odd truss rods that were a cheap part sourced for the guitars. So, talking about Fender, there is a brand new Fender guitar this week. Not the not this ridiculous Supreme thing that you're so in love with, Joe, but you also may be in love with the Monterey Strat. Tell us about it.
Yes. Today, this has been public domain for a while, but today finally they go on sale. This is today whilst you're listening to it, listeners. Well, you might be listening to it in the future. In which case, this is in the past. I've confused myself. Okay.
Yes. Biff Tannen's president.
Yeah. So, So this is the Jimi Hendrix Monterey Stratocaster to celebrate the, what anniversary is it of Monterey?
Sure.
Some anniversary of the Monterey show. Anyway, so
60 years?
I don't know, man. Whatever.
No, 50 years. 50
years. 50 67,
years.
Wasn't it?
50 years.
Is it 67?
Yeah, 50 years.
Yeah.
So what's super cool about this guitar is this was the show where, the legendary show where Jimi Hendrix set fire to his guitar on stage. It was between him and the Who was going to headline that show. And in the end, because neither band would back down, the story goes that a coin was tossed to decide who would headline, and the Who came out on top. So Mr. Hendrix, knowing that the Who were going to go on stage, play their show, smash up their gear, as they were sort of as they were known to do at that time, needed to find a way to upstage the band that he was obviously substantially better than. So he
not sure about that, mate.
It's true. So he decided to set fire to his guitar. So during the last song of his set, which I think was Wild Thing, he switched over to a white Stratocaster that he'd painted in nail polish. He'd painted a pattern on, and he played that just for the last song, and then set fire to his guitar and had this sort of very ritualistic.
Wasn't it a red Strat that he'd put a bit of white on the top?
It might have been, yes, because there was some.
It's like a candy apple red Strat with like a white Fiesta Red, sorry.
That he'd painted white over the top of, and then
it would be candy apple red because it's rosewood board.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so he did that, and of course the rest of the set he played on his probably more famous guitar, known as either Black Pepper or sometimes Salt and Pepper, depending on what website you're reading. But it was the Strat he played for the rest of the show was the Black Pepper Strat, named as such because the first time he played it was 3 days after Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band had come out.
Really? That's why he called it that?
No, and he covered Sgt. Pepper's three days after the record had come out. He learnt it and played it at a show where I think Paul McCartney and maybe a couple of the other ones were in the Paul McCartney were in the audience watching. So he sort of played it, you know, for them. And so
how did he learn it so quickly?
I mean, when awesome. You consider as well, like it wasn't, you couldn't just fire up YouTube.
No,
exactly. Yeah, so incredible. So that was cool. So he did that. That was
you couldn't even rewind. Like if you put the record on, then you're like, oh, I got that bit wrong. You have to go over, move the needle back to the start, the beginning, wait for the bit that you got to, right, carry on playing.
Also, he's probably on tour. Like he has a record player knocking about with him.
Yeah, exactly. Now he did obviously.
Don't make him like that anymore, do they?
I don't.
He did go
Boyzone and Westlife.
He did go on to cover that song more times on other guitars, but yeah, the first time he did it was on that black Strat. But of course, because he liked that guitar so much, he changed over to this rubbish one that he wasn't such a fan of, that was all painted, and then he set fire to it and then smashed it up on stage. And there are parts of it, I think there's a part of it at the Jimi Hendrix Museum still surviving. But cool that they've released kind of this guitar. Obviously the bulk of this I've spoken about a guitar that isn't the guitar that Fender re-releases, but it's, you know, it's a vintage correct. It's cool. It's something there for the collectors, for Jimmy fans and stuff like that, and I think it's a great guitar.
Is it a nitro finish?
Don't think so.
No, it's not going to burn as well then, is it?
No.
That's the problem.
I think it's but the base model of like a classic player 60s.
Oh, is it? Okay, it's Mexican made then.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, good.
I mean, yeah, it's not expensive.
No, it comes in a soft bag.
Oh, really? Oh, so it'll be Mexican at that point. How much?
I couldn't tell you. I know it's out right now whilst the podcast is here, but it doesn't come out till tomorrow, so I can't see it.
Right, so you don't know how much it's going to be. Okay, good to know.
But there is, it's priced as a Mexican guitar.
Yeah, okay.
And Palfaro board.
There we go. One thing that wasn't in the news is ESP and LT, more specifically LTD, put out a statement about Rosewood. I don't know if any of you saw this, but they are switching a lot of their guitars over to Palfaro, and they are switching the cheaper stuff over to a composite board.
Oh, okay.
To avoid CITES regulations, because they are also struggling to get their guitars into countries, you know, get them from where they're being shipped into the countries that they're supposed to be in. So yeah, they're ditching Rosewood as well on a lot of
stuff. Seeing a lot of guitars come in for photography at work, a lot of well, not so much Gibson, but Fender and PRS now have massive stickers on them that say non-Rosewood.
Really?
Yeah,
just
to try and avoid I guess the search process.
I guess, because that's the other thing, if you're making like a load of Palfaro guitars, they've still probably got to be checked that they are Palfaro rather than...
I guess so. I guess they probably do spot checks. I mean, knowing a little bit of what's going on, because I'm sort of involved in every time there's a new...
How much Rosewood is in them Bluetooth speakers?
There's no Rosewood in the Bluetooth speakers, thankfully.
Although... Oh, no, wait, that's not released yet.
Cool. Okay, good to know.
I don't know what you were going to say.
No, that's good.
It's just a Bluetooth speaker with Joe's face on it.
That's right. Yeah, it's the custom shop Bluetooth speaker made of Rosewood.
Yeah,
we made it in Rosewood. So
Bosewood.
Bosewood. Oh dear, it's the little things, isn't it? From what I understand, the regulation is smoothing out a lot more, because this is brand new for everyone. Bringing Rosewood onto into the CITES portfolio is something that I think took a lot of people completely unaware, because from what I understand, you know, CITES is it's not just, it doesn't just affect Rosewood. This is the sort of legislation that stops like the ivory trade and stuff, you know. And I think that it completely took people by surprise, because I don't think anybody realised how much Rosewood was moving around the world so much. I don't think the people involved in the governing body knew what was, you know.
There's probably quite a lot more Rosewood there is than ivory at the moment.
Well,
going around,
for sure. So. But, you know, it's it seems to be smoothing out, and from what I understand, we've really cut back our expectations on how long things are going to take to move at the moment. So I think things are looking a little bit clearer, but there we go.
Good news. Shall we dive headfirst into a big old swimming pool size bucket of
questionable presenting?
Reese says question.
Wait. Before we do this, you know, there's like a really important bit of news that I wanted to talk about.
What?
You're
leaving the podcast?
No.
Oh, damn, new guitar.
No.
Oh, God.
Can I talk about it?
You can do this quickly. I want to do at least one question this week.
Yeah, me too.
If you have to talk about this absolute guff, then you're more than welcome.
Everyone needs to go to fusionguitars.com. You must do that and check out Fusion Guitars. They are currently on their Mark II model of their Fusion guitar, which is a guitar that allows you to do everything. So you ever thought that you needed to
How much did they pay you for this?
Amplifier to a gig? Did you ever think you needed to bring pedals, a recording device, teaching tools? No, you don't need to bring anything, just your Fusion guitar, which has a built-in amplifier, but like a high-quality built-in amp.
It's got three speakers.
Yeah.
Or is it two?
Two speakers. I think it's two little...
One to cover the highs, one to cover the lows.
Yep. Yeah.
All of that. I hope you don't want any mids in yourself.
Yeah, none of them have got any guitar frequencies in there.
It's a rechargeable lithium battery. It's got a built-in amplifier. And most importantly, it has a slot on top of the body where you can slide in your iPhone. Suitable for iPhone 5S. But you can slide
You keep saying that. You said that on the front, but surely you can plug in a
it does say it's compatible with all new iPhones.
Okay, right.
So whether or not it fits, I mean, that just means it has a lightning connector. Whether or not it fits, because it's a recessed slot for
that
your
looks
iPhone.
Like, that looks like a 6 in that.
Yeah, so I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is, which is great. And of course, you can use that with their app to run sort of a similar thing to like GarageBand or like Bias FX sort of thing. So you can have all your effects running off of a handy control just, you know, on your phone in the top of the guitar, which does make the guitar rather deep.
It sits faces flat, up like
facing
a,
up.
Like an acoustic guitar.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Like an acoustic guitar pre.
Because
I'm not even going to bother Googling this. I was like, I really want to know what you're talking about. I'm
Mate, it's
not
the best.
Bother.
No, it's the best guitar of all time. All time. This is the best guitar. But not only that, they also suggest, obviously, you could watch tuition videos, like looking down, watching tuition videos whilst you're playing. Perfect. Ideal. You can plug headphones straight into this guitar. It's a perfect travel instrument as well
that
as
also,
being...
I tell you what, that would also help if you've got a... if you've only got an iPhone 7, which obviously doesn't have a headphone jack, you could plug your phone into the guitar and then...
And then plug some headphones,
plug your headphones into the guitar as well.
Yeah.
You could, fantastic way to get around if you're, you know, commuting.
Exactly. And, you know, if you're in a covers band, you could put the phone in there and you could just watch like Peep Show or something while you're playing this boring covers band.
Yeah, you could do. Yeah, exactly. It's great. You know, two humbuckers, bladed humbucker in the bridge position. I think this is an absolutely fantastic instrument. You don't need anything else. This is all you need for the rest of ever. And also, I think that $1,600 is a really reasonable sum of money.
I tell you what, it really is a brave move. Working with somebody else's technology when you're producing something like this.
Well, because
we've talked about this before, like that Digitech product that came out that had...
We talked about it a few weeks ago, didn't we?
Yeah, that had the old iPhone, the pre-Lightning connector.
So it was a multi-effects unit that you had to load iPad.
You plugged your iPad into...
Yeah.
And then all of, right away they brought out the iPhone 6. Was that the first one with the Lightning?
Yeah.
And that product was rendered completely useless.
Yep.
And, you know, there's always talk about Apple doing something new.
Well, I saw...
And they've got, you know, the iPhone 8 is probably going to be coming out in September.
I saw what purported to be a prototype of the iPhone 8 today, and it's about a centimetre longer than the iPhone 7. So if you've... With this, I would imagine that
Oh, my God.
Joe's just showing us a picture.
So
with this, it looks like you've got a dock that fits quite snugly into the guitar. If the phone is suddenly a centimetre or half a centimetre longer, it won't fit in there anymore.
But I think, to be honest, I think this guitar is so good that if Apple choose to try and bring out something new, I just think the Fusion guitar market is going to reject it. And people will just start buying secondhand older iPhones just so that they can run them with their Fusion guitars.
What you're saying is Fusion guitars are going to kill Apple because of compatibility.
I'm serious. I think it's possible. I think this is the most important guitar we've ever spoken about. And I'm frankly like shocked that this should have a full podcast. In fact, it's having a full podcast behind the Patreon wall with just me. But, you know, I think this is incredible. Everyone, check out fusionguitars.com.
Just say questions.
Question.
Nibble guitars. Reese says, question regarding octaves. Do I go for the Whammy 4 or the Boss OC3? Which gives the better octave sound?
That is two completely random choices. Like, they do totally different things.
Yeah.
Yeah, we discussed this on the actual group itself. So if you remember, you can go and have a look there. But it was like, someone said, well, do you want to go up or down? So I think to kind of clarify, he then said for kind of lead work, but for chords. And I was like, but then he only wanted to spend under £60. Right. So I think the new question is, what's the cheapest octave pedal I can get that will give me a cool sound for solos?
Does he want down or does he want up? I'm still not sure. Like, for solos, well, surely you want to go up.
Yeah. But right. The thing is, if you get a polyphonic octave for solos, if it doesn't have like the whammy thing, you don't kind of get like movement in the sound. And if it's not like an Octavio, it doesn't sound right.
No, yeah. You're totally wrong.
Do you know what I mean?
So the answer the answer to this, because the thing is about octave up, is it sounds crap if it's done well. Like, good octave ups don't sound good. Bad ones, glitchy ones, sound cool. So the ultimate solution here is the Behringer UV300 or maybe 3000, which is the, or maybe 600 or 6000. I'm not sure, one of those two numbers, which is their...
That was four numbers.
Yeah. Sure. But yeah, they do their Ultra Shifter. I said UV, I meant US. Which is, I got the whole name wrong. Anyway.
US 300 or 1000 or 600 or 1000.
600, yeah.
Their Ultra Shifter is absolutely brilliant. A super glitchy, and you can have it on like an unlatched, and you can set the ascend and descend time on the octave as well. So you can kind of get those sort of whammy sounds out of it. And it's £35. Like, that, I think they are one of the best cheap pedals that you can get at the moment if you want to not spend very much money.
I said, actually, if you can get hold of one, a second hand Whammy 4. You can get them for like 50, 60 quid. There's so many on eBay. Like, if you want that kind of whammy thing, just go and buy a Whammy.
What about the Dan Electro Food Series?
Yeah. You could get the Chili Dog, but then the problem is they're not really like... They aren't great for your board unless you've got a switcher, which is why I suggested the Moore Pure Octave, which I was actually corrected... I didn't realise that it was polyphonic, because I'm sure when I plugged it in, it did not sound polyphonic. Wow. So I think it's also just a bit cheap and a bit glitchy. But if you want loads of octave down options, that's a good one. But actually, I think they do the pitch box as well, which is the I think that does all the harmonies.
Yeah,
that's a clone of the Boss PS5, I think. Oh, it does up and down. But that's 50 quid. So, I mean, once again, it's pretty cheap.
Which is the Moore pedal that was discontinued?
That was the Tender Octave.
And that's the one that they have announced is coming back.
Yeah, which is very exciting. A lot of people are using that because it was a fantastic pedal.
Yes, but I think it's coming back in a non-original form.
Right, right.
Well, I mean, the reason it got a cease and desist from EHX,
it got a cease and desist, but it wasn't down to... what it was down to something mechanical inside, apparently.
Right.
So they had to discontinue it to relaunch it.
I see. Okay.
But it had a different mechanism. So the early Tender Octave is apparently the one to find.
Yeah,
but
they are.
I think
great.
People have suddenly realised that and now definitely aren't selling them.
No, no one's selling them. You can't pick any up secondhand, certainly not for a reasonable price. And the Pure Octave is such a different thing. I still think the Pure Octave is cool because one of the best things that, you know, the way Moore pedals work, you always have the large circular control in the middle and then you have like two or three micro controls along the top. With the. On the Pure Octave, the larger control shifts between different like octave frequencies. So you have like, so it will be like a -1, -2, -2 +1, -2 +16. You know, stuff like that.
Really?
Like, it's loads of different weird options. There's probably, I don't know how many, because they're all notched, but I don't know, maybe 20 options, like the whole way around the circular, like loads. So it's a really... It's not a conventional one. I don't think you can do simple, straightforward octave sounds with it. But if you are looking for something weird, I think it's cool. And actually, to be honest, just like putting it completely wet and flicking through those rotary controls makes some really like gnarly, glitchy sounds.
Yeah, it's so there's a few options there, Reese. Hope that kind of covers you. I think for my money, you know, like if you got 60, 70 quid, just get a secondhand Whammy 4. Like, it will do all the things that we've just talked about. Plus, it's the only one with a real-time controller. then you can do all that Tom Morello stuff as well. That's going to be it for this week. We are going to talk on the Patreon this week about what's going on with Epiphone, a brand that I feel that we dip in and out of when they release new stuff, but I'm,
which is pretty regularly.
Yeah, but I feel I'm a little bit disconnected from the product line, and I thought it'd be cool, like we did with the Squires, to go through the line, have a bit of a catch up, and yeah, see where we are with everything. I think that's the plan. So if you want to hear that, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad free and early. $5 a month gets you the extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week, plus access to the whole back catalogue, all the interviews that we do with various people in the industry, and the miniseries Joe Branton's Rant On, and some upcoming miniseries as well. Just keep your eyes peeled for that. At the $10 tier, you get your name read out on the regular episode like this every week.
Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve Margaret, Blair Doors, Jonas Badger, Andrew Matcher, Matros, Jesus Short, Eddie Jesse, Brad Bass, Paul Joy, Attack, Cowboy, Wings, Gilliman, Matcher, Andrew Jesse, Narius,
that was the worst thing you've ever done.
Yeah, that's the worst one yet.
I've got... I'm feeling dreadful. I've got a really bad headache.
What was wrong with that?
Awful.
Everything was wrong with that.
Right. Yeah, I think if I'd have paid for that, I would be absolutely gutted. we'll make it up to you next week, Patreon backers. If you want to join the conversation or complain about Joe Branton, go to facebook.com/groups.
Maybe that's a new Patreon.
Listeners Ranton Branton.
I could read out people's complaints about me.
Yes.
like when celebrities read out mean things that people have said about them on
mean
Twitter.
Tweets, yeah.
Please, if you are able, like even if you've got just an iPhone with voice memo, just record a sort of 30-second rant on Branton.
We should maybe...
And then we'll...
Because he's the sort of person that does hold grudges.
They'll be anonymous.
We need to set up another email that he doesn't have.
Have you got access to the main email?
He does, yeah, he does.
Do I?
Yeah, he does.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, what we'll do is if you record your rant on Branton, just sort of things that you, observations about him or reasons you hate him, record that, and then you could, no, I'll tell you what you do. You find me on the Facebook group and then you just direct message them to me and then he'll never see them. And I will stitch them all together, and when we have enough, we'll put out a Patreon episode that's just people's rant on Branton. Make them, if you can, make them, I would say, between a minute to 2 minutes long. That way we need maybe 15 to 30 entries, and that will make up a Patreon episode. The Guitar Nerds listeners rant on Branton. So yeah, do that. Facebook.com/groups.
I just don't think it should go. I think it should go in the main feed. More people need to hear about the other reasons that people might not have thought about why they dislike Joe Branton.
Yeah, indeed. Okay.
Someone being like, oh, he does do that and that is annoying.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. I thought that was an unreasonable thing for me to think, but yeah. I'm glad that you've said that.
Mm. Yeah, so the rant on Branton.
Oh, so I totally forgot
you were
here.
You were here, yeah, completely. Send that to find me in the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You can follow us on Twitter @guitar nerds, on Instagram @guitar nerds, or over at YouTube, youtube.com/guitar nerds videos, where we just put up a video of the 5 weirdest guitars of the 1960s. I think it's one of our best videos ever. I really like doing it. It was great fun. Do go and check that out. In the meantime, we're going to head over and do the Patreon, and we'll see y'all next week.
Thanks, gang.
Bye.
Bye.